are listening to Fast Track Podcast, the place to be to fast track your personal finance or fast track your business or both. Through a series of conversations with those who have learned it, done it, and made it. Today, my guest is called Curtis, and he's a CFO of a small business and a personal finance coach. And he has always been obsessed with his own personal finances, and that expanded when he had an opportunity to coach others through teaching Dave Ramsey's classes. It sounds already very interesting. I have prepared so many questions on this topic. And after a few years of doing this, and he knew that personal finance has become very important. And then beyond that, he started a podcast. And on the podcast, he is passionate about specifically on the topic of couple finance, and he wants to help people to understand it better and have money conversations with their partners. And today I'm so happy to have Curtis on the show because it has been long overdue. I know you're very busy. So welcome to Fast Track Podcast, Curtis.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And let's start from the very beginning. At what age you started to gain interest in personal finance and you are aware that you need to, you know, manage your money smartly?
So I grew up and my mom was actually a CPA. And so from a very early age, I was exposed to and I just saw the way that they handled money. And so when I got out on my own, I actually can look back in my uncle and his wife for Christmas presents and birthdays, they would always give me like savings bonds, you know, where you get an interest rate and all this. And so it was like from a very early age, I had this idea of investing just really, you know, drilled into my brain. And so whenever I got on my own, unfortunately, I probably wasn't as focused as I could have been, like a, you know, young 20 to 22 year old. But over a period of time, you know, I ended up and just was very passionate about it. And so while I didn't save as much as I probably should have, I was always aware and it was always a part of, you know, just I was always budgeting and doing things like that. And so I then got the opportunity, like you mentioned in the intro, to teach some Dave Ramsey classes. And so before I'd just kind of been doing my own thing, you know, not really paying attention to what other people were doing. And then I, through teaching that, kind of dug in a little bit more and kind of developed my own opinions. Cause once I was like tasked with giving it to other people, it kind of helped me frame out some of those opinions. And so that's kind of where it was just kind of downhill for me with that point of then becoming like super passionate about it, seeing how much people struggle with it. And then I guess that's how I end up here today. So.
And what did you do with the gifts that you received, the bonds?
Yeah. So I think it was when I was in college, we went and we cashed them all out and we put them into an investing account and put it into some, you know, mutual funds back in the day. And it grew. And then I still have that account. I don't remember. I wish I could remember and see, like, go back how much it was that I got from that and what it had grown to now, but it's just cool knowing that that was a piece of my story. So
when you say we put that in investment account, did you do it with your parents or?
Yeah, it was with my parents at that point. Cause it was like when I was still living with them. So my mom took me down, or I still remember like being taken down to the bank and meeting with a guy who told us like, here's what you can invest in. And we made decisions. And so, yeah, I like still can picture that day in my mind. It's kind of funny.
So. That's a very good decision, because I know another type of story is the parents have been saving for the children through a mutual fund, and then when they turned 18 years old, you know, the kid received a large lump sum of money, and yeah. Then straight either 18 or 21, then straight away the kid bought a new car.
yeah.
So you still have your investment from back then?
I do. Yeah. I didn't go buy anything with it. I left it. It was, in my mind, it was an investment not to be touched. And so, like, I don't think it was huge amounts of money, because I don't, you think $50 or $100, per birthday for 18 years. So it's not like it was like some crazy sum. But, you know, when you look at compound interest over that period, when I get to retirement, it's going to be, it'll be a huge help.
Then I'm very curious, like, about the Dave Ramsey class. How did you get yourself involved in coaching people in Dave Ramsey's classes?
Yeah, so I had listened to his stuff before, so I was aware of his stuff. And the church that I go to, they were looking for someone to teach them, and I was kind of voluntold. I didn't exactly volunteer, but I didn't say no. And so when someone asked me about it, I was like, yeah, it sounds kind of fun. And so then I did that. And so there's like, you had two different semesters. And so we had classes for a couple of years. And I found the further I got into it, the more I was thinking, well, I don't agree with this piece, or I don't agree with this. And like, but in that, you get to talk to people about their financial situations. You get people from newly married couples to single, young, 18-year-olds, all the way up to people that were in their upper 50s that didn't really have any retirement. And so you're dealing with everything across the spectrum, and you get the opportunity to have conversations with them about their money in ways that you wouldn't normally get to in a day-to-day situation. So I enjoyed teaching them, because I realized at that point, like, I enjoyed talking about it. I enjoyed like a lot of the, helping people with their decisions and just better understand it. And it was kind of the first time I realized not everyone had the education that I had on it. Before I just kind of assumed like my experience was normal, like we tend to do,
No, it's not normal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you realize that, and then you're like, well, shoot, I need to do something with this. I need to help. I need to share this with people. And so that then transitioned into the guy that had got me started on it. He had some stuff he didn't agree with in that as well. And so we talked, I'm just going to create my own curriculum. And so I kind of worked on that and started teaching that a little bit. I'm not doing those anymore, kind of a COVID hazard, but yeah, it was a good experience. And, I know Dave Ramsey is a hot button topic everywhere, for various reasons, but, it was a good starting point for me.
I wonder, what are the points that you don't agree? Can you name some examples?
Well, so some of it's just his demeanor, the way he approaches certain things. Definitely when he came up and he talked about paying off your house, that's a great decision, if interest rates are really high. But when interest rates are super low, that may be the right decision for some, but it's not just this cut and dry, like, this is what your next step is. He wants everyone in mutual funds and claims that you can get the best returns. Well, that's always looking back. That's not looking forward, and so it's impossible to make those picks on the front end. And then kind of my final straw, I guess you could say, is, here in the US with COVID, they had some, business relief that businesses could have taken advantage of. And he was telling businesses to not accept the money. Basically, the government's going to trick you. And so you had businesses that were on the verge of going out of business that are taking his advice to not take the money, and you're hurting families and hurting those business owners. So it's just, I feel like he has some good basics, but he's turned into more of a shock jock, which they kind of tend to. And so I feel like in some ways he can do more harm than good. But for people that are just starting out, he's really good at getting people motivated. And so I think I'm not going to curse at anyone that's choosing to start there, but I think that's kind of the beginner entry level, and that's kind of there's so much more than that. And there's so much better things that you can learn from today.
Yeah. When I ask you this question, the first thing came to my mind, I was thinking, is that I remember he mentioned that buy your house with cash or buy your house without mortgage. I didn't understand why not using leverage. It's one of the best leverage you can get to buy a house.
Yeah. Well, Andy then says, like, well, it's, he talks about manual underwriting, and you can definitely get that done, but it makes it harder because it's a lot more work on both sides. And there's not a lot of people that do that. And as stuff becomes more and more automated, it's, you know, kind of an outdated system. And so, you know, he makes the comments of like, well, no one ever got rich off of credit card points, but, you know, credit card points can be helpful if you know how to do it. So the rule that I came up with in that class is I said, listen, I'm not going to make you cut up your credit cards like he wants you to do. But if you have ever missed a payment and had to pay a late fee because you overspent or because of whatever, you've already proven you don't have the self-control. So you need to cut up your cards. But if you have never missed a payment, if you've always paid in full, then I'm not going to tell you, I don't know that that's the right advice for you. But if you at any point, you know, missed it other than just stupidity on your part, you know, of just, you know, forgetting, like I did that once of, I got a new card and I forgot to set up auto pay. And then I realized, and so that I had to have them waive the fee and all that. But if it's, you know, you're gaining interest because you can't pay off what you've paid, then you've shown you don't have the self-control. It's like any other addiction, you know, alcoholism or whatever. If you've been an alcoholic, it's not smart to be around alcohol. And so that's kind of the comparison I make with credit cards.
Yeah. I know credit score is very important in the US, right? And then you can use credit cards to boost up your credit score if you know how to use it smartly.
Yes.
And then what is your personal, let's say, money mindset or how you approach your personal finance?
Yeah, this is more than just like money for me, because I'm very big picture oriented. And so I start out with a high level of like, what are my values and what do I want to accomplish? And then I'm just the word that I always come back to is living with intention and being very intentional about all the decisions you make. And so I've always been someone who questions things, and I've always been someone who wants to research. And so for me, that means I want to know why I'm doing everything. I just don't want to take the conventional wisdom that's out there and just go with it. So I want to know the justification for the decisions I'm making and be able to explain that to my wife or whoever else that I'm trying to explain it to.
Can you give us an example in the context of how you approach money, that the intentional way of living?
Yeah. So another, like a good example of that is like right now I'm kind of reevaluating what my allocations are for, you know, what I put in stocks, bonds, or now cryptocurrency being a part of that. And it's like, I've always, you know, I, for the longest time, it said, well, I'm not going to do cryptocurrency because it's speculative, it's this or that. But over the last year, really, I've been on a journey of kind of reevaluating what I feel like is a value. And so what that means for me is, you know, I'm a big time reader. So it means me, I'm going and picking out books and learning about these concepts. So I'm learning about, you know, some like emerging industries, or I'm learning about, Bitcoin and what that means, and, you know, what that means for the world and for finance in general. And so it's like, it's studying these things. And then, I'm in the process of like writing up, this is the reason that I believe this, so that I have that for my wife and family to pass on, if they'll understand why I made my decisions. So to me, that's like what that intentional process looks like, is it's kind of being willing and able to question the assumptions you've even made in the past, and just try and validate those with data, or, you know, by learning from other people about those things.
Yeah, exactly. So you're conscious about your own decisions, not that you heard it from somewhere, you read it from somewhere.
Right, right.
For the benefit of our audience, I want to touch on the basics of personal finance. Did you ever make a budget for your family expenses, or you already know how much you need to spend for each category since you are aware of where your money goes?
No, this is another deal, like super intentional about how we spend our money, because before I got married, I didn't necessarily keep a budget because I was a single guy, and my spending, you know, I wasn't buying anything, like anything for myself. So it was food, housing, you know, gas, that was all my expenses. But when we got married, we've been married for 9 years now. So when we got married, we drew up a budget. And today, this is not necessarily right for everyone, but we have a detailed line item budget where every subscription we have has a budget line item, like even down to we have recurring expenses, like with all of our toiletries and all of like her makeup and all these things. And we have all these things like itemized out, because I view it as like anytime that we're making a different decision, you know, we're making a trade-off. And so we want to be intentional about what trade-off we're making. Now that's not to say we don't spend any money, because, you know, I budget a reasonable amount of money for both of us to have in just general spending that we don't track, but for the stuff that's a part of our, you know, monthly, yearly stuff, like I have spreadsheets with all the people we plan to buy gifts for the year, with every subscription we've had, with all of those things. And so it sounds super intimidating, but it's been a multi-year process. It's not something that we did overnight. It's something that we've developed over our whole relationship. And so it's been super valuable, because it's helped keep us on the same page and help us understand and talk a common language.
And is it easy for you to get your wife on this journey?
Yeah, it wasn't at first, but I found what changed all of that is I did the typical thing that a finance nerd will do of just go at them with the spreadsheets and say, well, look, this is, if we do all these things, it's going to be great. We're going to have all this money 40 years from now. Like, we just need to buckle down and, you know, do this or do that. And we had fights initially. Like, it was tough, because it was like, you know, it did not make sense to her. And like, in her head, it made sense, but then it was hard to translate that into day-to-day stuff. And so what really changed it for us is about 3 years in our marriage, I said, we sat down and we said, okay, like, what are our actual goals for, what is our 5-year? What is our 10-year? What is that individually? And then what is that as a couple? And how do we merge those two things? So now that we've had, so just to be more practical in it, she's had this dream of, she wants to go back. She's a freelance writer and editor. And so she wants to go back to school to get her master's, because she wants to ultimately teach at a college level. And so in her mind, she just wanted to go do that. But I'm thinking, well, look at this money we're spending. If we invested this money, like, you know, this is going to be so much worth so much here in the future. So when we talked about that, we said, well, 15 years from now, I don't want to be working the same type of job I'm working. So what does that mean for us today? And for today, that means that we need to be really focused today. And when we talked about, you know, her goal of being a teacher, her thinking was, well, yeah, I want to do that, but we want to have kids. So it's not going to be realistic when we have a baby in the house for me to be teaching at a college. So she's like, well, that's really probably a 10-year down the road. So then it helps reframe all of those decisions. And then it allowed us to then look at the budget. And then I was able to communicate the budget to her in a way that made sense with what she said her goals were and what our family goals were. And so that was something that was groundbreaking for us, is you back out of that and have a broader discussion, and you're not actually talking about the money. And it's only after you get on the same page that you then circle back to the money.
So. Yeah, I like that, because everything starts with the why, right? You understand mm-hmm. why you want to achieve certain things, and then what you need to do to achieve your why, and then you can show her your spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And then would you mind share with us, how is your investment portfolio look like? What's your investment philosophy?
Yeah, so right now I'm like I said, I think you'd mentioned I'm CFO of a small business civil engineering firm. And so we have the very traditional, she's a freelancer. And so we have an HSA, which is a, you know, health account here in the US. I don't think they're the same in Europe, but where we put money in pre-tax to that, and we put money into a 401k, and then we have a Roth IRA, which is post-tax. And so we're stacking money away in that front. And we are pretty much about 60% US, 40% international. And then we are allocating, we've actually gone from, we were allocating previously 5% to cryptocurrencies, and we're actually now up to like 15, 20%. So pretty significant in that. And so my philosophy is in that is what I did is I ran the numbers for us. And I said, based off of the retirement that we're doing now, even if all of this went to zero, which I don't think it would, then we would, based off historical returns, we would be okay to retire at 65. But if this, you know, cryptocurrency stuff pans out, and just based off the research I did, I have a belief in it. You know, I'm not going to try and tell anyone else what their belief should be, but that could take, you know, I'm 35 right now. So that could take our timeline to where I'm not having to work this 9 to 5 at 40 or 45. So to me, there's not really a sacrifice I'm making. It's just it's a bet and a play that I feel like, so we're taking pretty substantial risk in that, but it's a risk that we've modeled out. And so when I come to that, it's pretty different than what my philosophy was before, which was just stick it in index funds and don't think about it. But I've been able to, over a period of time, we've had a lot of discussions and been able to get on the same page with that. And so I guess that's kind of my philosophy right now. That's what I was saying. I've been kind of revisiting that and reworking through that. I forget what the other part of the question was. So if you
your investment portfolio, yeah. Yeah. Do you invest like, you know, real estate, precious metals, or do you have some other exotic investment vehicles?
No, I mean, we're strictly stock market and cryptocurrencies. We may in the future want to get into real estate, but physical real estate. But the crypto is actually taking part of what I'd originally planned for real estate. Just because I look at my time investment and I know that I can sub a lot of that stuff out, but you know, and have people do the work for me, but it's still a mental and time suck on that front end. And so, I made the call that, you know, I believed in where, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum and these other crypto projects are going, and, decided to make that bet into that. So I'm strictly stocks. We are, like I said, 60% US, 40%. And those are purely index funds. And then the cryptocurrency being about 20 to 25%. So
lovely. And for sure, my audience have already heard so many interviews till now, because I oftentimes ask the question, what is your investment portfolio like? And most of my guests, almost everyone, talk about ETFs, right?
Yeah.
So that is one thing I also want to help the audience understand a little bit more. Like, investing is not so complicated, even like CFO, you know, invest in ETFs. That's simple as that.
Yeah. And the thing is like, obviously I'm making a play with cryptocurrency, where in some ways I'm saying like, I'm smarter than what history is, right? Because, but I think in the stock market, anyone who thinks that they're able to beat, you know, what a, you know, pure ETF or index fund is in fooling themselves in most cases, because there's a lot of smart people that do it full time. And you're saying, as a part-time investor, you're going to do better than those people. And even those people have a really poor track record. I mean, there's all sorts of stats out there that show that. So yeah, it's almost a fool's errand. And then that's why I view the crypto piece a little bit separately, is while I'm making a bet, I'm making a measured bet for where we are and what our goals are. So.
And my last question would be about Delve Into Money, which is your podcast and also your ebook, right?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about it. Why you are interested in the couple finance topic specifically?
So delve into money is not actually initially geared towards marriage and money. It's originally geared towards, I'm a big time reader. I read, like, in 2020, you know, pandemic and everything, like, I read over 100 books in 2020. So, like, when I say I'm a big time reader, I mean, like, I would read for hours on every day. And so I wanted to merge I wanted to look at personal finance through the lens of non-personal finance books. And so that kind of started that journey. And then it kind of goes back to, we have people that we've talked to about their personal finances. And I just kept having these questions and discussions surrounding money within a marriage. And so while I'm still doing that with the basics of the podcast, I've kind of added this element of money and marriage. And so at the end of October, I released an ebook that's like a 5-part framework that walks you through with your spouse, basically how to get on the same page, how to improve your money conversations, because I think that's where most of us struggle, is we just don't know where to start with that. And so the first part of that is we want to understand our spouse's money background. And so there's some questions, and there's, you know, you can pick and choose what questions you want to talk about with your spouse. And then it goes into kind of what I was talking about, being talking about our values and our goals. And then it finally goes into a budget segment. And so it's trying to create a framework for spouses to talk about money when you have one that cares and one that doesn't. Because when I say my wife cares about our money now, she's still not in our budget, you know, every week. I'm in our budget every week. But when we meet, we try and meet on a weekly basis. And I use weekly loosely because it's the plan, but it's like, we've been really bad about it lately. But it's when we're having those conversations, we've already set a big picture plan. So we're just able to check in, and it becomes almost just a routine, a really easy thing. And I give advice in there too, like how to make it fun, you know, in those meetings too, because it's just, you know, it's not something in a marriage, even if you have a good marriage, that it's not like anyone's getting jazzed or thrilled to talk about their money, you know, and have those conversations. So that's kind of where I've been focusing on since then. And I have some plans in 2022 to kind of continue on that. I'm trying to get together with couples and really kind of work through it with them so that I can even refine that even more. Because I think when I look at the resources out there, not very many of they all just go straight to the budget. They all go straight to the money. And I just don't think that's super helpful when you have one person that's not on board, you know, which is generally the case. There's generally a disconnect there. So that's kind of what I've been working on.
I really like this topic. Also, you are doing a great job, because even for financial education, not many people get that. Nobody gets that from parents, okay, except you and a few others. And you don't get that from school. So starting point is, you know, even someone started to get interest into educating themselves with personal finance. And then when they get married, when they have a partner, how can they get their partner on board, right? So sometimes two people, they're in a marriage, but their finances are not aligned, even though they're in a marriage. But if two people, they're together on this journey, even the financial journey together, they can build a much better financial future, which can fulfill their dreams, what they want to achieve in life. Like you said, retire early or do further study or go on a world trip. I really recommend, you know, my audience, if you are listening, if you're interested in this topic, check out Curtis' social media, check out his ebook. Maybe you can share with us your platform where they can find you.
Yeah. So the website for the podcast, which is where you'll find the money and marriage, is going to be delveintomoney.com. So that's pretty easy. And then my main thing is I'm on Twitter. I'm on other stuff, but Twitter is just really where I live. That's, you know, so if you want to actually connect with me, Twitter is the place you want to be. And my handle on there is Curtis. It's Curtis with a K, and then Hanni, Hanni. And I'm assuming as you'll put that in the stuff too, so they can just click on that link. But yeah, I love to have conversations. Don't hesitate to reach out and, you know, DM me if any questions or concerns or, and I'm really passionate about this. It's super important because there's nothing more powerful than a couple working together to then be able to achieve just crazy stuff. It's just so much easier when you got someone with you, because you can just multiply the effects. And so I'm excited just to already hear the things that I've heard from people that have seen it, and excited to see what's going to be the long-term result of this. So
yeah,
thank you so much for letting me talk about that.
I'm glad to have you here, but before letting you go, I have one last question.
Yeah.
What is the biggest money mistake you have ever made in your life?
Oh gosh, you don't want to ask this question.
I want to.
So this is, it's a little bit of a story. So I'll try and make it short, because some of these details are not important. But basically, me and my wife, we saw a house that we wanted, and it was in a cool neighborhood that we really liked. And so here in the States, if people don't, you know, if homes get foreclosed on, they do sheriff sales. I don't know what those would be called elsewhere, but so you go down and you have to go to an auction style sale to try and get this house. And so we decided we were going to go to the sheriff sale. And so we get there, and my dad went there with me to kind of just be support. He just wanted to see what was going on, because neither of us had been to one of those before. And the first mistake at that sheriff sale is I didn't look at the sheet telling us which number ours was going to be. I let my dad do it, and he said, well, it's going to be the fourth one up. And so I listened to him, and so I bid on this fourth one up, and I get my I actually win it. And so I'm pumped up. So I go to call my wife, and I realize when I get to the back and I look at the sheet, I realize I just bought the wrong house, the house that we had no plans on buying. And so
how is it possible you bought the auction is not at a house, not in front
of
the
house? It's like a bunch of houses being sold at one time or being auctioned at one time.
Oh, okay.
So it was the fourth house in the auction out of 20 or 30 houses. And so I managed to bid on the wrong one and buy the wrong one. Thankfully, I was able to get out of the contract. But then while we were there, my dad decided he was going to bid on a house that he'd been looking at, and ended up getting that house. So I went in on him with that, and it was a good experience. But, and I can actually send you the link. I actually told this story to another guy, Stephen Wealthy, on Twitter, and it's on his blog. But basically, we made a little bit of money on the house. But to do that, I took money out of my Roth IRA, and the stock market returned more than what we made on our that we made on the house. And then because of the rules with the Roth, I wasn't able to deposit money in. So it's a multi hundreds of thousands of dollars mistake by the time we get 20 years down the road. So that was definitely my biggest mistake. It was a big learning experience, but we were too optimistic in thinking we could turn the house around quick enough that I could put the money back in. And that was not the case. So,
wow.
So I'll send you the link, and you can, it's an interesting, yeah, I don't remember the math, but I hadn't done the calculation until Stephen Wealthy asked me about it. And then when he asked me, I just cringed. So
It's okay. Don't use the compound of this part. Otherwise it hurts.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing the story. And also, lesson learned is that if you are going to make an important investment decision or purchase expensive assets, be careful about what you're doing.
Yeah. We should have done more planning than what we did for that. And yeah, that was clearly a lesson well learned. But, you know, I think there's, you know, it's a fun story to tell now, and it's an interesting story, but, and in the long term, if you stay consistent, you can overcome any mistakes. And we're going to make mistakes no matter how educated we are, you know? And so it's just keep plugging away, really, you know?
Yeah, I love what you just said. If you stay consistent, you can overcome any mistakes. Like, let time and compound effect to catch up that for you. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much for being here, Curtis.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed the conversation.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Fast Track Podcast. Show me your support by liking this episode and sharing it with a friend. Join the Facebook group at Fast Track Podcast 1, or you can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and of course the homepage, fasttrack.life. See you in the next episode.